at CETA, who will tell you some of the real stuff, and I'm going to bring you up to date on what's happened with ACBAR. You're probably aware that a certain amount of CMB has caught our attention at CETA for very many years. Of course, there's prehistory, but this is sort of the landscape of where we are and where we are going. Experiments online now, experiments coming soon, and experiments coming a bit later, and pie-in-the-sky possibilities as we look into the 2020 territory. There might be another dedicated satellite, who knows? It very much depends on earlier things. So, John Siebers is going to remind us what CBI in its first two incarnations did. One was targeting polarization, but also the famed excess, which he'll be bringing up today. I'm going to talk about another high resolution experiment, ACBAR, which presented what I hope you all saw was a rather remarkable spectrum in January of this year. And we decided we would take the opportunity of when it came back to update it for WMAP-5, as we shall see. And I'm going to show you one specific result from that, which is kind of fun. Boomerang, of course, has had its day, did great things. We'll get a little bit of WMAP-ism from Mike today, but Mike's going to focus more on selling you on the virtues of ACT. And I understand you PIers heard the first SPT results a little over a week ago, which are pretty spectacular. And these are sort of a 1-2 punch going after high resolution to even much higher precision than ACBAR. What has also come about in May of this year is the final results, well, not quite the final results. There's more work being done as we speak, but major results from QUAD, which was South Pole based. And that, I'm afraid, sadly, has superseded the brilliance of the CBI polarization results and the Boomerang polarization results and the CatMap polarization results with a much cleaner spectrum, more to come from different experiments. There has been an ongoing experiment for quite a while at very high resolution, beyond any sort of damping tail. It's called the SZA in America and SZA here, and I hope no matter where you're from, you get used to that we only respond to Z here, or Zeta if you're from a different culture. Anyway, there are two people in this room that are privy to what's happened in with the SZA, because we were just in Chicago and we got the great unveiling, but there are rumors swirling. So that's Andy Albert and I. And it's a really great experiment, and some really interesting results are coming out that are going to be related to the whole CBI story that you're going to hear today. APEX is currently operating in Chile with a few detectors. BICEP 1, which is going after the B mode in a sense, although it's not expected to get there. In incarnation 1, nor even probably in incarnation 2, but it's not impossible. That's soon to be happening. That's a very nice experiment, also South Pole. Quiet 1, which took over the space of CBI in Chile, has just started up, and it's got some very preliminary maps, and so it's also targeting polarization, also large angular scale, trying to at least set the stage for the assault of the primordial B modes, which is, of course, of great interest to everyone in this room, whether you want to know the details or not about the CMB. That's the target. Okay, ACT-SPT, they don't do polarization. Eventually, SPT will do polarization, probably in the sort of 2011 time scale. Polar Bear is another targeting polarization experiment. SPIDER is a balloon experiment that'll be targeting the B mode. There are other ones. Keck will be, it is actually called SPIDER on DAISY, which is the mount in the South Pole. But Keck gives some money and so gets the right of naming the Keck Foundation. And so that's something that's sort of hand in hand with SPIDER with great new detectors. There is another proposal, which has apparently already been funded out of Princeton, to go after the B modes, Lyman Page, Suzanne Stang, et cetera. That is something I don't know very much about, except that the team is obviously great because Page and Stags are great. And all of these, and Clover, are trying to use very large arrays of bolometers that are especially sensitive to polarization. For the SPIDER case and the Keck case, they're called antenna-coupled bolometers. We don't need to go into the details, but it's a major development because for these, we're talking about a 2,300 bolometer array that's covering a number of frequencies. That's absolutely fundamental to work with these things. Planck, an absolutely fantastic thing, which is scheduled for launch about April of 2009, only has 52 bolometers. It's the same class of bolometers that were on Boomerang. And that, you know, they were really great. A number of them are polarization sensitive. It's all sky, really fantastic. But all of this stuff, because of the change of detector technology, is coming on. Depending upon what is seen by these B-mode targeting experiments, there may or may not be a case for a dedicated satellite beyond Planck called B-Pole in Europe, CMB-Pole in the US. The nature of the game is that we have to prepare for it from the point of view of what detectors are required, but it's just too early to have any sort of commitment, in my view, to go after anything like a satellite until you say there's something to really detect, because the biggest problem is foreground. Okay, so that's the landscape. And now I'll get to a bit of ACBAR. So I'm sure you all dutifully read the January 07 Astro PH. So he's nodding because he probably did, but that was supposed to be a bit of a joke. So we had three releases of ACBAR. So the earliest one, which was just after the first release, well, a little bit after the first release of CBI, confirmed the damping tail. But that was associated with this tiny little region of the sky. Then the next release, which was 07, in terms of analyses, we were dealing with just also small regions of the sky. And so a change of strategy was given to do wider fields. Well, of course, everything was working perfectly in the detectors, and dedicating time to larger fields. So the data in terms of detector hours times of the release, which is pretty good in itself, the ACBAR 07 release, it's 2.1 times the detector hours, but because of the scanning strategies for larger regions, it covered 4.9 of the sky. Now that makes a difference because, as you know, there's a sample variance which causes error bars to grow. It's got nothing to do with detectors or anything, it's just sampling of the sky. Another big development which has improved the results of ACBAR enormously, and it has been improved since, which is the thing that will come out in hopefully a day or so, it should come out more than a month ago, which is our update. The calibration uncertainty used to be 6%, and then we were able to calibrate off of WMAP 5, WMAP 3 first, and WMAP 5, five-year data, and that is a very important development in terms of trying to stop the floppiness that can occur at very high resolution because it gets so anchored into WMAP. So
can I ask you something? So there was this claim that there's too much lensing in ACBAR, something like that.
That's what I'm going to address. Okay. That is what my little piece is all about.
Okay.
So I'm glad you asked that question. Okay, but third, fourth, fifth peaks, great. John's going to talk about excess. The number that was in the January 08 release was 1.7 sigma, which indicated that it was going in the right direction, explained the CVI excess. With the new calibration results, it's gone down, so we can't say that it's trying to see something. All we can say is that it's not inconsistent with CVI. Okay, I don't think I'm going to bother with showing mapisms here, except that there's a very good agreement in overlap between Boomerang and Akbar, which is always a nice thing when you're looking at the same regions of the sky. Okay, so this was the startling result. The very small error bars actually seeing some of the ups and downs of all of the peaks. And here, it's updated from the January release to show the WMAP5 ACBAR and how it interacts with Boomerang. And this is the current grand unified set of results showing quad as well, which are these points here, which also have a very nice indication now of the damping tail, and they're working hard on it because of what John's going to talk about, which is that the blue points are a bit higher and then red, that's the CVI excess, and that's the current status of it. So in my remaining minutes, what I'm going to talk about is something which is so subtle, you are going to be totally startled that we would have the audacity to say that we've seen it in the data, and that is, what you expect is when the CMB comes towards us and passes through the clustering matter in the universe, the cosmic web, lensing will occur. Of course it will occur. It's impossible to avoid. And we think we know how to do those calculations. And so if there's a consistency, and this was addressed somewhat by you, but you didn't actually name it as one of your possible sources of reasons for going for excess power. But in any case, there must be lensing. Okay. So when we did our last release before this, we started to include the effects of lensing on the CMB power spectrum. But look how subtle they are. So the red is the best fit with lensing. Blue is actually not quite the best fit, but it's essentially it's the same parameters without lensing. Not a big effect. And so what I'm going to try and convince you is that the blue and the red are such that they are statistically different, and there appears to be a detection of the requirement for lensing. And that the amount of that, and this goes back to your statement, is, as far as we can tell, consistent. And that is an evolution, and I'll give you more details about that. So how we parameterize this is by a multiplier, which the lens power spectrum for the CMB is the one, if you don't include lensing, plus a template, which depends upon cosmic parameters, which we allow to vary, times an amplitude. But that amplitude has only one number, 1.00000. So you shouldn't really be allowing it to vary, but it's a nice thing to indicate what happens when it does vary. So as soon as we released the ACBAR and we talked a little bit about the lensing that we had found in it, in talking with Anthony Lewis, former citizen, we decided that we would try this trick. About the same time, Slozar and collaborators also did the same thing. And in our first run through, we had a result which was less but similar to what they were getting, which is that we thought the effect, this parameter here, was greater than one, consistent with one, but greater than one. It was not consistent with zero. Now we have understood that what we were doing was wrong. We don't know what Slozar has actually done in detail. It appears that one of the things we did is what he did, but we get a somewhat different result. But we think that this is a very nice, succinct way of doing Q lens. And the value we get, and this is rather interesting, with WMAP5, it should be 1, right? It's 1.34 with pretty large errors, and most importantly, at the two sigma level, really huge errors. That is to say, WMAP 5 is a very subtle set of results through these peaks, and it can, in fact, determine lensing at some level. Now, I might remind you that lensing has been, in effect, directly seen in the WMAP data by correlation with the radio galaxies by Kendrick Smith, Oliver Zahn, Olivier Doré of our institute, and by Mike Nolte, but the politics of WMAP precluded him from being on the paper. But I thought I should advertise that he was one of the key ingredients.
So you're saying for first study, just WMAP alone, that there is a detection from lensing?
Well, this is not really a detection. Look at the error bars at the two sigma levels. So the thing is, there's a hint. But there is...
Even at two sigma, it's larger than zero.
Yeah, that's right. And let me just show that this is what the distribution is like. Yeah. Right, so it's pretty interesting, right? So even there, there is a movement towards it. When you add Akbar, it sharpens up, but not, you know, hugely. And then with CMB all, it's about the same as with Akbar. There is another way of presenting this, which is really the correct way of dealing with this. We're in the fortunate situation that the parameters of this and the parameters of this are exactly the same. And so the way of talking about how significant things are is by what's called the Bayesian evidence, which is essentially the integral over all of the parameters in here and the value of it for Q lens equals 0 compared to Q lens equals 1. And if you do that, you find that the Bayesian evidence with WMAP plus ACBAR is supportive of the lensing being there. And it's about the same here. I don't really want to try and turn that into a sigma. If forced, I would tell you it's about 2.4. But it really doesn't make that much sense. This is the correct language to be using. In the NBSS plus WMAP, they found about 3.4 sigma, that is to say, a stronger detection. Okay, now, should this surprise us? Well, it's got to be there. Should it surprise us that the data is good enough right now to use it? A little bit, but that's what the increased precision will do for us. But let me describe to you, and then make you probably skeptical, that here, this blue curve here, is the rising CL as we go to higher or lower L's, becoming quite enormous. And this, with its very characteristic shape, is the delta CL, the template that we are actually, in effect, trying to fit for. And so it's a rather subtle thing, given this really huge thing, that you can actually do a detection of such a relatively small difference. But nonetheless, statistics is wonderful. Okay, I don't think I'll do that. So I was going, I did a very naive thing just back of the envelope there is I took those numbers and then translated them to a sigma 8 limit. I will, first of all, say I may have made an error. Secondly, I'll say that, it's on my favorite high side rather than the lowish values that we're dealing with now, but with errors that are too big to contemplate. Okay, so now we're going to move on to our other symbologists. And just to set the stage, this was going to be done by Mike, but we didn't get this transferred over in time. So think of me as Mike Nolte for the purposes of the next second or so. This shows the progression and resolution of sky with some clusters in it from the WMAP resolution. Although it's nothing to do with formal, of course. There it goes. Boomerang resolution, a little bit better. Akbar resolution, pretty good. You start to see things. Ak resolution, totally brilliant. SVT, same story. That Toby Marriage creepy is, by the way, really great guy at Princeton. And then I will end on Eureka. Where we are headed in the subject, and now it's John's turn.
So, Dick, I noticed the error bars went up when you added more CMB to the lensing. Is that.
Yeah, probably a little bit of minor interaction in the data set. So that is not as serious. I have to give you this so that you can. I don't think I even turned it on, did I?
Okay.
But I'm not loud enough. Does that mean they didn't? So you see, I was saying classify things.
There are these the other ones.
You're supposed to do this.
Yeah, sorry.
But when it's classified, you turn this off.
Yeah.
Okay. Apologies for the scratch in a second.
All right, how's that? Well, it's a small room, right? So we can hear me. Okay, so I'm going to give you a brief update on the current state of the CBI access, which I guess has been referred to at least once already today. So here's the old data. This is what's out. This blue point right here, this is the CMB as of 2004. Here's telescope.
it's fun to observe at 5,000 meters, but we can talk about this every year, so I'll just briefly go through it. We have volcanoes too. It's lots of fun. One big point I'd like to make is that so the CBI is an interferometer, and interferometers are very clean experiments by and large. So this is our polarization result. And I just want to point out that over here, the B mode results we got, without basically doing any cleaning, any worrying about anything, the total signal was like 1 or 2 microkelvin squared upper limit. So quite clean. And so just keep that, you know, in terms of systematic errors from crafting the data, keep that sort of number in mind. As Jake said, I combined 2 sets of stuff to get a spectrum from so we're close to 5 years of data. The one thing that we have to be really careful of is point sources. So this is the dominant foreground at 30 gigahertz. And so this is where, if we got this wrong, we might have a problem. So we've spent a lot of time working on the point sources. Here's me at the prime focus of the GBT 100 meter dish. So this thing, I think, it's getting close to the side of the height wall. I think it's taller than the Statue of Liberty. It's enormous, and you can see for miles. We've spent a lot of time. We've done 2,000 sources. Just to give again, we spent a lot of time on this. So 2,000 sources with a single dish. That's a lot of time. Your stuff. We've reproduced source spectral indices. So basically, what we're trying to do is get the yeah.
But you can finish your
time. I was going to say. So the big thing we have to do is there don't appear to be any substantial sources that show up at 30 gigahertz that are not seen in lower frequency catalogs. And so, since we don't have the sensitivity to find the sources of 30 gigahertz, we have to find the lower frequencies and then from that extrapolate their properties. And so that's why trying to reproduce this, trying to get this nailed down is very, very important. So,
just to make sure I understand, so the point is that since the point source noise is the dominant thing, especially at high altitude, you're trying to like actually identify, use some radio to telescope to find all of the sources and as many sources in your field as you can?
Yes, sort of. That's part of it. So we have there's the NDSS survey which finds things at 1.4 gigahertz. So every source we know the position of, we just zap a hole in the map basically in the dark. So the question then is, what do you do about the sources that were too faint to show up in that catalog? And so from the sources in that catalog, you then try and go measure those properties and extrapolate to lower flux. Right. So that's the thing you have to get right.
The correlation between the sources, is that negative?
The correlation between the spatial correlation is small. It's something that Brian Mason has looked at. It's totally negligible. So the other thing that people this is new because I looked at this stuff last week. There's a second population of faint sources that are too faint even to show up in NDSS. And so we've gone and gotten some more data on those, and they have a contribution that's something else we need to worry about. So this is, we do a whole bunch of work, full pipeline sims, hundreds of them. But I just want to give you an idea that this white histogram is the level of the sources that we see. And this is the uncertainty marginalizing over a finite field sizes, so shock noise, uncertainty in what the source populations are. This is our old number, and this is a number that the VSA folks calculated. And this is the level of the excess we see. Now, I just want to point out, so these faint sources, I haven't had time to make the good plots of the faint sources, but that ends up in a shift that looks of about that much. So it's something you have to do right, but it's a fairly small contribution. Okay, so having said that, we've done lots of other checks to see if any other experimental thing could be the source of the excess. The answer to that, no. So, well, nothing that we can find, so if you have any ideas, you can tell me, I'll go check them. But having done that, here's the our old, which is that mean spectrum. And this is Kerensky's as of, even though it says 2000, that actually is this week. So we still see the excess signal up here. It's very consistent with what we saw before. And it's about sort of three times what, we see about three times what you'd expect, plus minus 1.3. given a sigma 8.8 from SC. So we detect power. You can play with games with which model you use for what you think the SC should be given parameters. But we detect power above the CMB only is sort of 2.5 to 3 sigma now. And every field sees a level above the CMB. We have 4 different fields, and they're all consistent with each other.
This is less than 2.65, is that the
percent? It's getting down to about 2.6 above sigma 8.8. So
okay.
Those chains are still running.
Okay.
They're, you know, ask me in a week.
Okay.
And I'll have an actual answer. But I just want to point out, in terms of consistency with the data that's already out there, this blue curve is the best fit to CBI, and this salmon colored one is the scaling to ACBAR. You can see we're actually very consistent if the signal is from SC, which has a frequency dependence. We're highly inconsistent if it's something like a thermal spectrum. So, you know, we combined with ACBAR strongly believe that, you know, whatever this is not a thermal signal. The other point is Finla is a they have a data point out there. This is a 6-meter dish array before it turned into karma. And again, that blue is the prediction for what we think Finla should see. And for those, I guess you know the numbers, it looks like our predicted level for sort of, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 L is around 120. So if that helps you who know what the SEA is seeing, gauge consistency. So we've already heard some reasons why theorists should care. But even if you think that whatever is going on out there is really boring and some bland physical process that doesn't matter to you at all, there are actually things that you care about. In particular, if you can really nail down everything else that's going on, you can get useful information about the universe from the Heil spectrum. It's really hard to get a lot more information if you think it's sort of standard 6 parameters. You do better in MS, things like that. But where you really can learn a lot is if you, I didn't mean to insult anything that he's looking very pained over. Oh, sorry.
Subdominant physics.
So you know, any extra effect, you start to add parameters, all of a sudden they tend to change what's going on at IL a lot relative to what you already know is happening at low level. So you can do lots of fun things like here's a cosmic string plot. So this is a template for what's going on in string models from a Pedosian L. And blue is WMAP5 only, and red is mu out in the Heil CMB. So having the extra constraints from the Heil CMB actually lets you break, lets you put on a much tighter limit on the string amplitude. So it's
the
power
is
supposed to factor 2. So the vertical is the string amplitude, and the horizontal is on X. And so in particular, without Heil CMB, you could say, well, the detection of NS could just be a string component, and NS equals 1. But when you add Heil CMB, all of a sudden that becomes highly in favor because it's just chopping up that region. Another one is the brain spectral index also is degenerate with what's going on at Heil. And so if you can count this down, you can see that amplitude BSC is fairly correlated with the spectrum mix running. So you'd like to get this nailed down so you can get running measured from CMB well. So a lot of this stuff, it turns out that the WMAP spectrum feels whatever is going on at Heil. And so that's what you want to nail it down, because even if you're trying to pick things up through the Doppler peaks, they're getting skewed at surprisingly low L's by the SD. And so you really want to have that level tightened down. So that's so I'm trying to make sure that I kind of the change is still running. So this is not what the plot will look like. Just very close to what the plot will look like. So in summary, we see a high power level. It's marginally consistent with sigma 8, I think, as I said, once you want to change around. But we'd like to get this nailed, and so a lot of people working on this, and very briefly mentioned SVA quad, SVT playing inactive will do things, and this now is a handoff to Mike Nolte. So, any questions? Nolte's walking up.
Yeah, so in those, I'm interested in the pleasant string plot, obviously. But is sigma 8 allowed to walk? Is that marginalized over sigma 8, assuming some?
Yeah, so that's a full parameter run with an extra template. Actually, I'll get a template on that TT string.
Did you ever run a template where you set sigma 8 to WMAP value and then see what the.
Well, so, I mean, WMAP is in here.
Right, I know. But I mean, if you peg sigma h to a certain value and then just integrate just along it.
He's talking about a slave.
I'm just curious if it would.
Oh, you mean for the SE?
If you knew that what sigma 8 was, and could you.
Well, so when you say you know what the SE power spectrum is.
What?
So when you say you know sigma 8.
I guess what I'm wondering about is if you have a plot that has, instead of NS on the x-axis, sigma 8.
But I can make one.
I'd be curious.
Sorry. I came in late. What's the best value of sigma 8 then? or did you not say it?
I'm not saying it. The change is still running. Okay. So I got the final bit of stuff I needed for source corrections like last week, and it takes them a week to run. So. Next week, I can tell you. It'll be, so with the Komatsu nostalgia template, it'll be like below 0.9, I think. But again.
Below 0.9?
No, not below. Just over 0.9.
That's what I can,
you know.
So, 2.9. ACFAR, and when we did the run for the ACFAR case, with everything included, and BEMA, the number is, this is a different template, it's the hydrogen-based template, it was 0.93. And the primary number is, it depends upon details, but it's sort of 0.80, maybe 0.82 or so. So there is, the SN is narrower than it was, so there's really a bit, yeah, I mean, it's not outrageous, but there is a bit of a conflict.
Okay, so my talk will be even briefer. I have new stuff, but it's something I can't show. Just to remind you, we are at Atacama Cosmology Telescope. We're an enormous telescope down in Chile. This is just a CAD diagram. Our primary dish is 6 meters, and I forget, this is like more like 2 meters. Just to give you an idea of the optics path, here's a ray trace in through the telescope, various colors of various three cameras we have, and then into the cryo there. And here's Chile, here's the site on right near the border, right there. Can you see it? This is a sort of old, this is a very old picture, actually. This is the telescope actually being installed quite a while ago, actually. And I should have put in another picture, but on the road, setting it up to the site, it just looked like one of those imperial destroyers. And so we're, of course, the CMB experiment. We're the next generation, so WMAP goes up to 1,000. we're going out to 10,000 like SAT. And of course, and so, but not only, but now that we're going out to these very fine scales, we're also going to be doing astronomy. So basically creating blind SC catalog clusters. And hopefully we can do some cosmology with that. Just get the number counts, try to do some dark energy statistics with that. So order, hopefully we'll get an order of, we should get 1,000 clusters with mass greater than 3×10^14. If everything goes right. And then of course, other garbage, kinetic SC, weak lensing, randomization, blah, blah, blah. And it's the standard game. We want parameters. They want the better. The greedy. I forget what these. This is. So the red curve is ACT and ground-based experiments. So this is NS and this is NS versus Brenning. Blue here is Planck. So Planck does well. Planck will do better, but we will be up. And do you remember what these colors are? Is this just WMAP?
Yeah.
WMAP 400.
So just let me add, we put that in the blue book, which was stating what the basic goals for Planck is. And the proximity of WMAP plus ground-based experiments, it's a bit controversial to put that in because one wants Planck to do everything. But as you've seen.
Well, it still will do better. I mean,
it does because it's all Scott.
It's dramatically better. If you just plot this box, Planck is much better.
And this is assuming that there is no SD, or is it cleaned up?
No, there was. So that's the point. The big issue is going to be the separation of these secondaries. Even for Planck, that's going to be fundamental because it's going out to about 2,000, a little bit beyond actually.
But they have more frequencies to do that.
That's right. And that's actually one of its biggest clever arts.
So I'll just give you a status update. We're running right now. I'll start observing tonight in about 2 hours. Had first light in October 2007, and our 2000 season ran for about a month, from 14 to 17 December. And that was with the first iteration of the camera. We only had a single 145 gigahertz channel. For the 2008 season, which we're running right now, we've got a full camera installed, so we have all three frequencies. This started late August, and we're going to run until the weather craps out, which is usually late December. And this is just to give you an idea of where we looked in 2007 for that month. It's this strip here, and also we've got some overlap with Stripe 82, SDSS Stripe 82. And we ran right over the Bullet cluster. We also ran over the BCS IR field. I'll just mention this briefly. We actually produce as much data every night as WMAP 8, 250 gigabytes. So you got 6 months of data. You have to solve for the map, which is essentially just matrix times vector. The vector is 6 months of data and trillions of data points. And it's a big problem, and it's taking us, it takes some time. It's not impossible. Fortunately, we have this new supercomputer on the way, 33,000 core cluster at U of T. Which will help immensely. And they don't actually believe that we're actually going to be a big user of this. We're also almost as big a user of the computer as Atlas. Some dinky little $10 million tournament versus a €5 billion project. So I'll just show you a little bit. This is actually ACT data from last season. This is an image of Bullet cluster. So the colored image is the Bullet cluster here. And we've also overplotted the lensing convergence contours in black, and also the X-ray contours in orange, although it might be hard to see. So I will take questions about this data, like Sarah Palin takes questions. But I'll just say that this is just a few minutes of data, and it has been smooth, so this isn't our final resolution. And I'll show you one more. This is AS0592. Make this wrong version. And then a prediction plot, which is a little bit old, for what we should get in terms of power spectrum for the 2007. And it's a bit of a mess, but let's see. Focus on these little bars here, which is where the error bar should be. So you see, for the very first season, which is only about a month's worth of data, it should be pushing out to 3,000 already. And this curve here is the is an expected SD spectrum. So basically, the CBI access problem will be solved within months, if not sooner. And expectations in the future, we should have the first papers out by the end of the year. More papers following on top of that. The 2008 season is coming; is also coming along, so that analysis should be fairly shortly after this one. And we're just taking more data. So 2009, the season's going to start in March. And so we're going to have a much bigger, this is going to be a much bigger season, so almost all, a good fraction of next year. And I'll just mention my other hobby. We're funded for 9 years right now. And we'll nominally have a 7 to 9 year release at some point. And the fourth peak actually started to come into view, but not like ACLAR. And that's it. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, Mike, and all the other speakers. So, questions for Mike? Or anybody else? So let me start then. What should we expect to see in your paper?
The first paper is going to be it's going to be similar to the SVT papers because doing the cluster stuff is a little bit easier.
So you're just going to say that we see these clusters and that's it.
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know if we're going to be at that level. Just the positions. We're also going to try to do the amplitudes, obviously. For the power spectrum, you need the full map solution. I mean, the SVT stuff is great, and I'm not saying bad about it, but it isn't just a simple co-add of the data, which you can't calculate a power spectrum from. So you need the full map solution to the power spectrum stuff. So we're focusing on that right now.
We really expect a number count of clusters, something like that?
For 2007, I wouldn't expect that in the earliest papers. I mean, the earliest stuff is just going to be a few popular clusters and the power spectrum. That's going to be the first. That's going to be the first goal. And then as we to the 2008 season, we'll probably start seeing some catalogs.
So are you looking at the same patches of sky as the SPT guys, or some overlap, or no overlap at all? Or?
I think there might be some overlap in our southern sky.
BCS.
Yeah, they're overlapping BCS too, right? So but they can't see.
Can't go too high.
They can't see the equatorial strip, the sky. So there won't be any overlap there. But definitely overlap there.
Okay, more questions? You can now ask questions from Pete or John as well. Something lingering. Okay, if not, thank you very much. Thank you all for coming.